Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Alrighty, hour number two. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney, company from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $500,000 prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today. Just go to rocketmortgagesweepstakes.com. That's cool. A little incentive. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. All right, Doug Peterson. You know, Doug Peterson is a hard nut to crack to fairly determine A, what specifically went awry and how much should be dropped at his doorstep? And two, what should be his value now on the open market with all these job openings?
BT, it's hard for me not to look at this and say he tanked this because he wanted out. He said, you know what? Jeffrey Lurie, let me out of here. This is not going to work out. This is some. It's a toxic relationship all the way around, from my locker room to my general manager.
Wow.
And he said,
but the guy's got a statue outside the stadium. You think he would be that cavalier?
I think it's an untenable situation. And
yeah, go ahead.
As much as we talk about Doug Peterson, we also can't look past Howie Roseman, who is now, if he keeps his job, going to be hiring his third head coach. Now, let's just have a brief history here. He was with Andy Reid back in 2010. That's when he was hired. He did not, even though he had a general manager title, he did not have personnel authority.
Yep.
Andy Reid had that authority because he had been there for so long. After they moved on from Andy Reid after his third season, this is Howie Roseman's third season, they hired Chip Kelly. He was the general manager until Chip Kelly said, I want personnel decisions. And so he moved to the VP of football operations. Eventually, he was kind of out of the organization for like half of a season. Then they fired Chip Kelly, inserted Pat Shurmur as the assistant. He took over personnel decisions again. And then they obviously moved on and hired Doug Peterson. And now they're firing Doug Peterson. And Howie Roseman has had personnel decisions over that point, even though it seems like it was a little bit of an influence the other way. And we know what happened this year. And that's what's most important, BT. In the second round of the 2020 draft, they drafted Jalen Hurts. And it was confounding to everyone who could imagine the dynamics of a locker room, especially a quarterback meeting room with a guy you just paid $128 million in an extension. And it never got better. Now, to move off of Howie Roseman and then back to Doug Peterson, he never managed this the right way. And you could see it from the very beginning of the season, BT. Mm-hmm. There were questions about, well, what role does Jalen Hurts have? He never answered it. Right. He just kind of let it sit in limbo. And I get it. It was a pandemic season. Training camp and OTAs and all that stuff were all disjointed and jacked up. But you had to have some sort of plan. Right. You don't. And if there wasn't a plan, that means that you weren't on the same page as your general manager. And so as the season went on, it got worse and worse and worse because the guy you paid $128 million started paying like he deserved to be on a fifth round draft pick, first round contract. He played that poorly to the point that he got benched. And the whole time, Doug Peterson just kind of, I don't know, didn't answer the questions. And not to anybody's satisfaction, and not the least of which was his team. When you stop and look back at it, there really isn't a question on why they underperformed. It's because there was chaos up top. And when there's chaos up top, that's why I went through that whole story.
Mm-hmm.
When there's
chaos, understood.
When there's chaos up top, it always trickles down to the field. Always.
Yeah.
Always.
I think you lay that out well, but I think it's important to go through those steps there. It's getting better, but also last couple of years, this division has been a train wreck.
Yep.
So there's been this massive element of underachievement and confusion in arguably, or maybe you would even say inarguably, now that the AFC East has resuscitated itself after a 20-year coma outside of the Pats, you can say that it's inarguably, or was inarguably, the worst division of football, and they still couldn't distinguish themselves. It's weird because anytime you win a Super Bowl, you know, you've got to dole out the proper props. Can a 16-team beat a 1? Yeah, I think anything can happen, as we saw with UMBC and Virginia. You don't stumble your way to a Super Bowl.
No.
You just don't. You don't backdoor your way to a Super Bowl win. You might circumstantially, if the conference is really down and the team you're playing in the division around, their star is hurt. Like, there could be circumstances maybe why you can maybe stumble into the Super Bowl. You ain't winning the Super Bowl if you're not doing some stuff right. So we have to make sure that we give him a lot of props. But
no doubt,
once you get past that, now you got to look at the facts. You say, okay, well, without, you know, not only Frank Wright, but without DeFilippo, you have had Carson Wentz go from a top five quarterback, basically somebody's going to win the MVP, to literally and statistically the worst quarterback in football.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two.
It's almost hard to do, man.
It's hard to do. It's almost even hard to even fathom. Like, doing is one thing. It's hard to even fathom.
That's right.
Like, how could that happen? So that under your watch, without the assistance and tutelage of Reich and DeFilippo, you went from that amazing that almost everybody was jealous of outside of two or three teams to the guy who's a train wreck and he's the worst quarterback in football. You may have lost the locker room, okay? Mm-hmm. I know we've heard conflicting reports, but what went down, you certainly didn't gain respect around the league, that's for sure. And the young quarterback, whether you wanted him or you didn't, the way you failed to empower him after so many good moments, you were so weak in asserting any sort of confidence toward him that he deserves to be fired. Like, I've said this for 2 weeks now, that he deserves to, maybe more, that he deserves to be fired. He earned this pink slip, all right? But the question now becomes, there's two. What should Philly do?
Mm-hmm.
And how appealing is Doug Peterson on the open market? A lot of teams are looking for jobs, Deke.
Yeah, well, I mean,
a lot of teams are looking for coaches.
Yeah, for coaches. I think that, you know, I think there was a mistake that was made that was, it's a simple one, but it's a very pertinent one. When you think about quarterbacks and when your team is built around your quarterback, and once you pay a guy, this is the same problem that the Houston Texans are going to have, because they paid Deshaun Watson so much money. The team is now built around the quarterback. Same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, ultimately it'll be that way with Josh Allen once he gets paid, maybe even this offseason. Like, once you pay the quarterback, you have to build around that quarterback. But then you go and you undermine him by drafting a really good college player in Jalen Hurts, and then you overcoach him. Like Marty Morningway, Rick Scarangiello, who came in as offensive assistants, in addition to his quarterback coach, in addition to Doug Peterson, who was the de facto offensive coordinator and head coach. There was too many voices in Carson Wentz's head, and you wonder why he faltered so much. And so that's mismanagement, right? It's hiring for the sake of hiring. And so I think that's a lesson that Doug Peterson learned, and he'll know not to do it again. Can he immediately rebound and become a head coach? I'm going to say no, and I don't think he should, BT. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of baggage right now hanging around Doug Peterson, and we have this conversation often. Sometimes you just need a year off.
Yep.
This, to me, it feels like Doug Peterson is the kind of coach right now who probably didn't expect this year to go as awry as it did. Mm-hmm. And there's no way he has the answers, right? And so to go just try to do it again someplace else, I think would be akin to Rex Ryan leaving the Jets and going to the Bills immediately. You know what I mean?
It doesn't
always work out when you think, let me just get to the next place.
Yep.
It doesn't always work out.
I fundamentally agree with that. It happened with Adam Gase as well.
That's right.
The word in Miami was, and it was refuted by some, but didn't get along with certain players, like Landry, some other guys were shipped out, blah, blah, blah. So he went right from getting fired in Miami after, quite frankly, like he did. I mean, what he did in Miami was like winning two Super Bowls compared to what he did for my team, but he really didn't do what he was hired to do in Miami. Yeah. Tannehill got hurt. There was an element of underachievement. They never really popped. Okay. But there were things that Gase needed to fix. What happened? He gets a job immediately. So there's no self-awareness. There's no looking in the mirror. There's no, moment of clarity where you say, maybe to yourself, but you at least recognize me, that maybe I've got to change a few things about myself.
That's right.
To make myself more appealing to my next employer. That never happened. Look at what happened with him. Now, that doesn't mean that with the Jets. Doesn't mean that Peterson is necessarily destined for the same exact fate. But look at Mike. Just because you take a year off doesn't always work either. Look at Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, it's true.
Mike McCarthy took a year off. All we heard was, for a whole year, he's scouring film. He's going to modernize things. He's getting his staff ready. He's in the laboratory. He came out. Mike McCarthy looked like he hadn't coached a game in 10 years.
True, but he also kept a few of that staff from the hangovers, and that's, you know, the hangover staff from Jason Garrett's era.
Yeah, true. A few of them, I got you. But the point is,
I agree with you.
You never really know.
You don't know. But this one feels, I don't know, man. There's a...
Toxic?
Not toxic, but it's like... It's like he was damaged. I'm not talking about, you know, reputationally, but it's just like in his mind, he never was clear. You couldn't get clear answers out of him. And for a guy who won a Super Bowl and, you know, three seasons ago, we're like, man, Doug Peterson is the blanking man, right? Look what he did. You had your MVP playing quarterback, type quarterback, go down, and you stick in Nick Foles and you win a Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. Hey, Doug, you are the man, dude. You got a job for life. And then just like that.
A statue. I know.
And just like that, it's
rip
over
it down.
And you're fired. And not in like a, yeah, let's just, it's just about time. You know, we've been here for a while. Let's mutually agree to, that's not how it was.
No.
It was like, dude, we can't stand you. You lost the locker room. You've been inexplicable with some of your decisions, and we don't trust you with your plan going forward. See ya. It's just stunning how quickly it flipped for Doug Peterson.
It's as swift of a demise, and I'll put quotes around the word demise, not mm-hmm. personal demise, but
yeah,
coaching demise. As swift and as shocking of a demise, I think, pertaining to NFL head coaches, that I can never recall.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
because
you're not going to find someone who won a Super Bowl and 2 years later is like out.
Correct. Now, if you achieve success, maybe like Parcells wanted to bounce around. He had that transient existence. Maybe you have a little, you butt heads with ownership. You want more money. You want more power. Not that basically... You lost control.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened. I want to read something for you. This is important because there's a lot of teams out there, and I know that he's going to be connected to my team because of his relationship with Joe Douglas. Mm-hmm. But if you – now, this is only one. I want to read something for you. I reached out to my buddy who's a great at season tickets, born and raised in Philly, an athlete, played college ball, played AAU ball with Contino Mobley. Not that mm-hmm. I need to drop the kid's resume, but I say that because he knows sports. Trust me. And I said, give me your most honest assessment of Peterson. I'm going to read it on my show.
And this is from a Philly perspective.
Oh, as good and informed and a passionate. Yes. He says, all right, down on his leadership. Don't think he's tough enough. Players like him for the most part, except Wentz. But I think he lost some respect in the locker room. Seems lost half the time seeing what's right in front of him. Not great adjustments, doesn't commit to the run enough, even when it's clear they're much more successful when doing so, especially when the O-line was backups and Wentz was a joke throwing the ball. Offense became stale, predictable, boring, and terrible. To be fair, tons of injuries, but they were regressing each year since the Super Bowl, Wentz included. In-game decisions, highly questionable, and downright awful sometimes. Wentz went from a top five player with Reich and DeFilippo to a bottom player, if not the worst now, would never hire him to develop Darnold or any other quarterback who needs a jump start without a legit OC with pull and a good quarterback's coach. Players didn't develop at all. Much of that is bad drafting, puts Roseman in parenthesis, as you said, should be gone as well, but does it absolve the staff and him? That is about, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 would be hire him, one would be runaway. That's about a 3.5.
Yeah, run away.
Like, that's not somebody that you want to run. If your team gets Doug Peterson, just remember those words.
Yeah.
Watch, it's going to be my team. Watch. It's going to be my team.
I hope not for your sake, BT.
I don't want him.
But here's the other thing to think about. Now, Doug Peterson, like, we know what happened. We saw it. We saw it happening in real time. You know, we were like, dude, you're trying to get fired with some of the things that you're doing and saying. And then ultimately the last game, we all know it went down. But what happens to the Philadelphia Eagles right now is the other question.
I got my answer.
Because, you know, you have this. I mean, let's call it what it is. This is a quarterback controversy, mm-hmm. and 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 in Philly right now. Yes, you could move away from Carson Wentz. You can trade him, but you got to wait until after the draft. It's not until June. I mean, if you want to take that huge $34 million hit and do it before June, fine, but you're hamstringing yourself significantly. Now, maybe you get away with that because Jalen Hurts is on a rookie contract, a second-rounder rookie contract, so you just suck it up and say, you know, we got, I don't know, $34.5 million because he's probably only making $500,000 on our quarterback. Mm-hmm. But are you really sold on Jalen Hurts being your guy? He looked good at times, but really horrendous others, you know, trying to throw the football. The Eagles are in... I mean, they're almost in purgatory right now.
I'd hire Eric Bieniemy.
But they're in purgatory.
I would hire
Bieniemy. The talent's not there. Maybe they got some young players, you know, but, you know, they could have drafted Justin Jefferson. Instead, they took Rager. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have drafted DK Metcalf a couple years ago. Instead, they took J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Right? You look at the trust in building the right kind of team. I just don't know if it's there. There's so many question marks right now with the Philadelphia Eagles, more so than I think I had coming into this past season with the Giants and the Washington football team.
Which is why I don't know that they'll do this, and I know we're going to get into Bieniemy a little bit later. There are some thoughts that he might not get a chair at all in this coaching carousel. But this is a job that I think would be good for Eric Bieniemy.
How come?
Because this is there is a lack of talent. So
I don't know. I mean, it's the first time head coach walking into this mess. I mean, BT, what I just said is real. Like, they got to redo their offensive line. They got a quarterback controversy, like a serious one.
Yeah.
They don't – maybe they have the right talent, skill position wise.
See, I don't think they do, which is why I think they need more concepts, which is why I would trust – I know he's not bringing Kelce and Tyreek.
I see what you mean.
He would bring an innovation that could be a shortcut to a dearth of talent in certain spots.
Yeah.
I would take a chance on Bieniemy if I'm Philly.
Zach Ertz is also talking about he's done there. I mean, this is crazy what's happened in Philly.
It's bad.
It's an implosion. Like, I mean, this just wasn't like someone coming and tacking from the outside. They did this to themselves, and it's blowing up from the inside out.
Crazy stuff, for sure. All right. Want to get us on some tweets, whether it's Peterson, whether it's some of the other stuff Teak and I hit, by all means, drop us a tweet at Teaky and Tierney. Coming up next here. So, obviously football heavy, but we'll get to inbounds, out of bounds. And on the menu, Zion Williamson, even better than we thought he might be. We'll tack that coming up. Inbounds, out of bounds. Hour two rolls on. Teaky and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Hey, this weekend, the NFL playoffs continue on CBS. The AFC's down to four teams remaining, with the defending champion Chiefs still the team to beat. Who takes the next step on the road to Super Bowl 55? Find out this weekend when the AFC divisional round plays out, only on CBS. All right, Teaky and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, simulcast on CBS Sports Network. Hopefully everybody had a great weekend. We'll do the college football playoff tonight, obviously. A little later, Lamar Jackson cracks through. And Russell Wilson, something hit me with Russell, and Teaky doesn't necessarily agree, which I think makes for a really interesting conversation. But I'm not going to divulge it now, but just put this in your back pocket. Something hit me with Russell that applies to no other quarterback in the NFL. And it's a little perplexing. I'll tell you what it is a little later. But right now, Teak, it's time for Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Ready to go?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's hit it.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now. And
all right, so the Bears snuck into playoffs 8-8 thanks to some hot play by former number two overall pick Mitchell Trubisky. Played well the final 5 weeks or so. Remember, they lost six games in a row at one point after, I guess that was, a 5-1 start? Mm-hmm. A very up-and-down season, Teak, as we know. And just what it seemed like their free agent to be, Trubisky, was getting ready to maybe secure another contract in Chicago. Fell kind of flat yesterday, thrown for under two Bills and just a touchdown, as the offense sputtered to 11 first downs and 239 total yards in a loss to the Saints. So, based on yesterday's performance, you are convinced that the Bears should not bring Trubisky back in or out?
I'm going to say out of bounds. I think they need somebody to play quarterback for them next year. So, I think it might be Trubisky on a short-term deal. I think I saw one of the insiders, maybe it was my buddy Glaze, say this, that they're thinking about bringing him back on a short-term deal. Not breaking the bank, not paying them a ton of money, but just giving them a chance to be a starter while they figure out who their long-term future starter is. Look, they're keeping their head coach. Matt Nagy's not going anywhere, and I think he earned that right not to go anywhere. But They need someone else who's more explosive and more reliable than Mitch Trubisky. His career is really in limbo right now, but I don't think he'll be elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm going to say out of bounds as well. And listen, I certainly don't want to turn this into, let's just fire everybody here. So I'm going to stop short of saying that the Bears should fire Nagy. What I will say is I don't see the evidence that they have the right guy in terms of winning a Super Bowl.
It's hard to argue.
I just don't see
hard
that.
To argue that, BT.
Very hard to argue that. Now, in terms of Trubisky's defense, that ball was 50 yards on a dime. Can you close your elbows a little bit and catch the football?
He was getting messed with. That was the only problem. He's like, oh, you had my arm at the last second. Okay, it still hit you in the chest. It hit you in the bad place, man. Right in the chest.
Right in the hands, basically. As easy as it gets. That should have been six, obviously. Not that it changes the entire complexion of this answer. I'm saying out of bounds anyway, but I think that, you know, if you throw 50 more yards on the board, roughly, another touchdown, so instead of one, it's two touchdowns, and, you know, who knows what that does from an energy point of view. It's 7-7 at that point. Maybe it's a bit of a different game. Maybe we perceive Mitchell Trubisky's performance today a little bit differently than many do yesterday. You know, is he the long-term answer? No, he's not. Is he awful? No, he's not. But the most disappointing aspect, and I tweeted this from Trubisky yesterday, and I made sure I prefaced it with, listen, anybody could tweet anything from the couch, so I'm not trying to be Johnny Tough Guy. But if you're a quarterback in the NFL and you are flushed out and you're in a playoff game on the road and you're playing for your career, you got to lay out on that first down.
Yeah, I agree.
That was not as weak as Big Ben taking a pass on the on the bad snap.
But at least Big Ben had an excuse. He's 38.
That was weak.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was alarming. Like, you got to lay out. We've seen so many quarterbacks do that. The kid from Washington Saturday night getting the pylon. You kidding me? You got to give it a shot. He slowed up. That should have been a first down. That bothered me, but my answer is still out of bounds.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Teague, let's squeeze in some hoops. So while the NBA impressed during the bubble, no positive cases. Things are a bit different now as various teams are losing players to COVID protocols here. It's getting a little messy. The Heat and the Celtics postponed yesterday due to positive tests and tracing. And the Sixers were forced to play Denver on Saturday despite having just seven players available to play. Now, after the game, Joel Embiid took a shot at the league saying, quote, they still hate the process, but the league issued a statement saying, we anticipated that there would be game postponements. There are no plans to pause the season. In or out. It would be better for the league if teams played with thinned out rosters rather than postpone the game.
Out of bounds, BT. You can't play with thinned out rosters consistently. You can do it for maybe a game, maybe two, but eventually the fatigue is going to start causing injury to these guys that are having to play 40 plus minutes, sometimes even every night. So I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think they can't consistently play with thinned out rosters. It's unfair to the teams. I know it sucks to cut the games short, but sometimes you got to do it for the betterment of the league as it pertains to the players. So I'm going to say out of bounds.
I'm going to say inbounds. And trust me, I don't love this answer either, but I'm not looking at it, you know, right, like what's right in front of me directly. I'm just taking more of a macro approach. If you start postponing games due to, you know, this these compromised rosters, which I understand the fundamental argument about doing that clearly, and my partner just raised one about fatigue residually, that's an issue. But when you're trying to squeeze in 72 games and now you're starting to see I believe there's two different games postponed tonight.
Yeah, New Orleans and Dallas is postponed.
Yep.
No, there's only one tonight.
Is it just that one?
Yeah, just that one tonight. But I feel like there was another one.
I thought there was two. But anyway, Porzingis
is Boston Celtics, the Celtics in Chicago tomorrow.
Okay, that's what it is. So Porzingis' return will have to wait. He's coming back. He was going to his first game from the knee surgery. But anyway, if you just keep punting and you just keep postponing, I don't know how you finish the season.
Yeah.
This is not trying to play 10, 12, 13 games, 14, like college football, or, you know, 17 weeks in the NFL. This is 2-3 games a week. I don't think that that's prudent. I don't think that that's even viable. So you got to suck it up and understand every team will face this, and also understand that, you know, the cream will rise, because even if a team that should be a playoff team has their roster subverted and they lose, say, 5 of 6 and they're not a playoff team, and we all know that they should be. Remember, it's 9-10 this year as well that have a chance with the play-in. So there's a window to get it right once you're healthy. I get it, but my answer is inbounds.
By the way, Miami and Boston was also postponed yesterday.
Yes, but that I know.
Are you in or are you out?
So we've had a few at Teague's Point for sure, and we're only going to get more, unfortunately, I would imagine. Zion Williamson, the most hyped draft pick since LeBron, while the former Blue Devils battled injuries and has had some minute restrictions here, which he's not really co-signed. He wants to play. You don't blame him. He's actually on historic scoring pace. 33 games so far, Teague. He scored 737 points, fifth most ever by a player in his first 33, and most since Shaq back in 93. Now he's putting up 22 a night, 8 rebounds, right around 32 minutes a game so far. So in or out, Zion has exceeded our expectations thus far as a pro.
Out of bounds, BT. And it's a simple answer why. Because I haven't seen him enough. He just hasn't played enough, and he's just unavailable too many times. So I'm going to say out of bounds of this one.
I'm going to say out of bounds as well. Not because of the lack of volume, but there's still a couple things that I want to see. You know, he's shooting 60. I know it's early. I get it. 62% from the free throw line. I don't believe he's hit a three this year. Mm. I could be wrong. I do not believe he's hit a three-point shot this year. So, you know, though, remember his first game, he hit four. Remember that game?
Yep.
And, I mean, obviously, a bit of false advertising there. The numbers eventually kind of sort itself out. He's very good at what he does, and he's very good. But I need to see some growth. He's a good passer. That I knew coming in. That doesn't surprise me. So he's really good, but I expected him to be really good. I can't say that I'm surprised because he's not doing things that I didn't. There's nothing that he's done that I haven't seen him do.
Yeah.
So I want to see an expansion to his game. That's the next level.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
He has not hit a three-pointer this
year. I didn't think so. Okay, he's not hit a three. Thank you for that, Tiki. The other thing, too, we wouldn't have time for, but with Pruitt in Tennessee, with the investigation there, there's a thought that Jeff Fisher could be in play if Tennessee makes a move. And you know what? If Jeff Fisher in the NFL.
I don't mind that, actually.
That's where I was going. Collegiately, yeah. I'm a lot better with Jeff Fisher than if it was an NFL team who said, as we introduce our new head coach, Jeff Fisher.
Yeah. I don't think I would be. I think I actually could get behind that, to be honest with you. I'd have to think about it, but I could get behind that.
My answer was inbounds. I was getting behind that. I hear you. All right, let's get the update from Ack coming up. We've got Aaron Taylor, who was just inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. We'll talk about the game tonight, our CBS buddy, after Ack's update, which is right now. Here's Ack. All right, Tiki and Tierney back, CBS Sports Radio. Time now for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. The DIY projects, you know the Home Depot is always in your corner. Now with their mobile app, can also be in the palm of your hand. The Home Depot mobile app, download it today to get started. Only from the Home Depot, how doers get more done. And I shouldn't be surprised. Ever since I took issue with D-Cell's inclusion of a question that I took issue with in terms of the whole Ball family basketball hierarchy, anytime he gets a chance to insert something about LaMelo Ball, he does it, including now. Saturday, 19-year-old LaMelo became the youngest player in NBA history to drop a triple dub. The Hornets won. They beat the Hawks. Ball had 22 points, 9 of 13 shooting, 3 out of 5 from downtown, 12 rebounds, and 11 assists. And Doing More brought to you by the Home Depot. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. We're supposed to get with our buddy Aaron Taylor, which I believe will happen. And then what it does, we'll bring him in, talk some shop about the game tonight and some other issues. But did you see, Teak? I retweeted this. I can't play it on the air because it is just laced with F-bombs and content. It's ridiculous. Did you see the video that I tweeted about 30 minutes ago of the Steelers fan absolutely ravaging his TV set with a ladder?
Yes, I did. Okay. It's like he thought about it, and he walked around the corner and grabbed the ladder and just started railing into it. Yeah, I saw that.
That's the absolute worst part of social media. It's not the bullying. It's not the mean-spiritedness. It's not the pettiness. Oh, those three all apply, obviously. But the worst aspect of social media is, for some reason, there's been this surge of 20 to, 30-something-year-old men who now record themselves smashing objects within their own home, feigning intense. I'm not saying that they're thrilled with the result. Obviously, they're disappointed. But feigning outrage and ire. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
but who the hell does that?
It catches your eye, though, because you look at it like, what in the world?
All right,
I watch it more to see what's fake. I'm like, all right.
Oh, that's my point. This one was fake. This Steelers fan? 100% fake.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, this isn't real. This is he set this thing up and he put this camera just perfectly. There's nobody like filming him while he's going crazy. It's sitting there perfectly aimed so it catches his living room door with the ladder just around the corner.
Yep. Christmas lights still up, by the way.
Christmas lights just enough of the TV. And it, I mean, it was so premeditated.
That's what I'm saying. And by the way, you know, it would be, I wouldn't mind if it was premeditated and he was monetizing this, but he's losing money because he's got to get himself a new TV. And here's the greatest bit, and very few people identified this. Here's the funniest part. If you're not sure that it's premeditated, which it most clearly is, the guy's watching hockey.
I know.
Before he destroys his TV set, there is some sort of hockey game on.
That's right.
I couldn't tell who it was, but I just don't get that. And that's coming from somebody who once I got a hairline fracture in my fist because it was after a Jets game in like 97. I was getting a drink of water on the way out, another gut-wrenching last-second loss, I'm sure. And I punched the, like a moron, the concrete slab behind the water cooler. I basically broke my hand.
Why?
I don't know.
What do you think you're going to do to the concrete slab?
I don't know.
Punch something that's going to give.
But if it was either Vinny or Glenn Foley or whoever it was that had a rough game, for that moment in my mind at that age in 1997, keep in mind, for some reason, I thought that that would actually make me feel better. It did not. I actually kind of broke my hand. But, Teak, let's get to our buddy, Aaron Taylor, who has a lot to celebrate. Just announced he is going into the 2021 class, the College Football Hall of Fame. We'll get to the game tonight for sure. 11 players, two coaches, a star at Notre Dame back in the early 90s. Aaron Taylor's with us. First of all, congrats. Long overdue. You have to be feeling amazing. What's happening, buddy?
It's been pretty surreal, dude. I got to tell you, man, I've gotten more text messages and congratulatory high fives and people that I haven't talked to in quite some time just reaching out and really acknowledging something that, you know, I did 30 years ago. It's crazy from that standpoint. But I got to be honest, man, what I did today, this morning, when I found out is I just sat down and started writing down the names of every person in my life that had played a role in allowing that moment to happen. And there were 100+ names. And my intention is to call all of them. I've talked to probably 10 or 12 so far today. And just one of those days you'll never forget, man.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Awesome, you know, you think back to those early impressionable years. I mean, can you remember walking on the, I don't know what they call it at Notre Dame, grounds or campus, but you remember walking on 18-year-old? What was the first day like when you went to the, when you went to, out to South Bend?
Well, that's a great question, Tiki, because it really kind of set the tone for what it was. And it was actually on my recruiting trip in December in 1989. And I think 20 of the 26 of us that signed in that year's class were on that trip. And that was their big, you know, football banquet weekend. And Zorch was there and Tony Rice was there. And that was 2 years removed from the national championship that they had won in 1988. But Bryant Young was on that trip. Jerome Bettis was on that trip. Like, there was some dudes that were on that trip. And I think that's among the things that I'm so thankful for is looking back on all those relationships and all those people. Like, I'm not in the College Football Hall of Fame if I'm not blocking Bryant Young every day in practice. And Chris Zorich is a true freshman. Like, that whole iron sharpens iron deal is for real. But when I got there, there was something special and different about Notre Dame. And to know that, you know, just going there and doing what everybody else did, which is work as hard as I possibly could, that somehow, some way, for the all of eternity, I'm going to be remembered as having a Hall of Fame worthy career there.
And by the way, Aaron, I'm just a guess here. I'm guessing that Notre Dame didn't load up those recruits, bring you on a bus, and take you to a strip joint and give you money, right? It was probably a recruiting trip on the up, right?
No, that was more West Coast than the USC UCLA trips. But that's another story for another time.
Understood. Definitely a different time. Let's get to, again. Congrats. We're so happy for you. I saw the news. We all retweeted it. It's just all and well deserved. Most importantly,
appreciate you.
You got it, man. So tonight we're gonna get a close game. I mean, there's a million ways to start. Let's
forget
just start
the close
with
game. What's the over under?
Yeah, no. General synopsis. You think that the Buckeyes are ready to hang around tonight?
I do. I think they're ready to play, and I think what we saw them do against Clemson caught everybody by surprise. But I had a chance to go back and watch that, and they're a legitimate team, and I think what makes them so special is that they can compete with this Alabama team at the line of scrimmage. Their offensive line really started to kind of find its groove and hit their stride, if you will, week 7, week 8. That's about all the games that they played, so they got a late start, so it takes a little bit longer to develop, but their offensive and defensive lines were a huge reason why they shocked the world beating Clemson in the readily fashion that they did. Now, the key is going to be if Justin Fields, their quarterback, can replicate 2 weeks or 2 games in a row, simply the best performance of his career. It was incredible how well he had played, and when you compare that to the way he looked against Indiana, where he struggled and got confused, where he looked against Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game, where he struggled and got confused, it was nothing short of remarkable. I would expect Alabama would be able to throw him some things. He can be careless with the ball at times, so that's something to keep an eye on tonight. But yeah, they have the firepower and the defense to make this a game tonight.
Yeah, but so does Alabama. And you know, I'm joking about the over under but seriously, this thing could get really high scoring. We saw this with the Ole Miss game early, the whole Lane Kiffin, yep, back with against Nick Saban, and then even Florida and the SEC championship game. Sometimes Alabama plays good defense, a lot of times they don't, and they just rely on being better offensively because of all the, I mean, they got every award winner on that side of the football. What does Alabama have to do in order to win this one? You know, mostly defensively. Forget, I mean, offensively, we know what they got to do, but defensively, in order to contain this Ohio State offense, which now looks really explosive again, what do they have to do to contain it?
No, those are great comparables that you brought up there, Tiki, because Ole Miss and Florida were the two shootouts that they had, and they still were able to outscore them.
Yep.
So the key tonight for Alabama is eliminating the big play. That is really what hurt Clemson in that ball game. And I went back and I watched the tape, and for them to be able to do that, to stop the big play, they have to tackle well, particularly at the safety positions. And their defensive lines, their outside linebackers, their DNs have to take advantage and be able to win their matchups against a very physical, aggressive tight end group that Ohio State brings to the table. When you look at their production on the ground, they had 12 carries for 197 of their total rushing yards. That's 78%. The other 32 carries only netted 57 yards. So it was feast or famine. So if Alabama can eliminate the big play, then Ohio State really hasn't proven that they can grind out the 4, 5, 6 yards per carry and march the ball down the field. Also, Justin Fields with those big throws, so many of those were contested, and the ball bounced right, and the DB just missed getting his hands on it. Alabama's quite a bit better in the defensive backfield than Clemson is, so that's going to be bode well for them, if you will. But stopping the big play, tackling well in space, particularly with their safeties, and winning at the line of scrimmage, particularly at the defensive end and outside linebacker spots, are what I'm going to be watching tonight.
We're talking to Aaron Taylor, and of course, CBS teammate here, CBS Sports Network college football analyst. He's going into the 2021 College Football Hall of Fame with 10 other players and 2 coaches, an amazing honor. Yeah, I just want to take you back to a word that you used with Fields here. You said, you know, replicate. Can they win? Because he's not having that kind of a game, I think we'd all probably agree with, for some of the reasons you just identified, mainly because Alabama's defense is just flat out better than Clemson's. But can Ohio State win with Fields playing a good game, or must he be great?
Fields has to be great tonight. He was a big reason and a big factor in what it is they did. Remember, in the Indiana game, when he was confused, he threw 3 interceptions.
Yep.
We were all touting him going into that, is that the fact that he had more touchdowns than he had incompletions so far up to that ball game. So he's proven that he can be rattled and he will put his team in jeopardy. Now, the benefit is the emergence of the running game with Trey Sermon and what that offensive line has been doing. To his point, to your point, he has to be great tonight. He is going to have to make some throws and get themselves out of situations that Alabama is going to give them where that's the difference. I don't believe that the running game in and of itself is going to be enough, because you can eliminate one of those variables. What makes Ohio State so tough to defend and what Clemson struggled mightily was they were getting gashed in the run. But when you break it down and you look at the tape a little bit, almost all of those big runs they had were against light boxes. They were against misalignments and misfits by the defense, or they were tempoed, where Clemson just simply wasn't lined up. Mm-hmm. We've seen that hurt Alabama when they were playing Ole Miss, as Tiki brought out. So that's a strategy I would expect them to employ. But if they can't get that run game going, and it's going to be really hard for Justin Fields and Chris Olave and the rest of those great tight ends and receivers to be able to take advantage of an Alabama defense that sees that on a weekly basis.
Hey, Aaron, we only got about a minute and a half left here, but, you know, Notre Dame, actually, your alma mater, did the best job of curtailing Alabama, and that may have just been because they pulled their foot off the gas. Is there a way for Ohio State to keep Alabama from doing what they've done to everybody, which is score 50 points?
Well, you mentioned the 11 postseason awards that Alabama has gotten, and one of those was the Joe Moore Award that I co-founded. That was named after my offensive line coach in college at Notre Dame. The best unit on that football team isn't the wide receivers, isn't the quarterback. It's the offensive line.
Yep.
Ohio State's strength of their team, very quietly, is the defensive line, particularly against the run. If Ohio State's going to win this game tonight, boys, they're going to have to do something that nobody else has been able to do this season, and that is win at the line of scrimmage. They're going to have to dominate the offensive line and get pressure, not being able to blitz, because we know what Mac Jones and Devontae Smith and that wide receiver group can do when you bring pressure, and they've got to be able to stop the run. If they can do those things and keep Najee Harris in check, then I think Ohio State's going to continue to shock the world and pull off a win that nobody thought that they would have a chance to do.
Aaron Taylor going to finish up with that list and making those calls and enjoying what's a day you'll never forget, man. Congrats.
Appreciate you, brother.
You got Thanks, it, man. Guys. Right back to you. There you go, Aaron Taylor. Some of the other names. By the way, you know what? I got some of the other names. I know Andre Tippett's going in,
yeah.
The old linebacker. Stoops.
Yep.
Tony Romo.
Our other colleague.
That's right. We've got Dan Morgan, linebacker from Miami. C.J. Spiller,
running back. Where was he? West Virginia, Dan Morgan?
In college?
Yeah.
Miami.
Oh, he's right. He was Miami.
Yep. Sproles is going in, Kansas State. Andre Tippett, Al Wilson, linebacker from Tennessee, mid-90s. You probably remember that name.
Yeah,
I do. He was there when you
were playing. Yeah, remember all those guys.
Yeah, yeah. Carson Palmer, Tony Romo, as I said. Kenneth Sims from Texas.
Who are the two coaches?
Who is it? Bob Stoops is one. Who's the other one? Why do I not have that in front of me? Hold on.
Yeah,
Stoops?
They don't. They're not promoting the coaches like they do the players. But
no, they don't. I don't have that in front of me. I don't know why I don't have that. Bob Stoops. Now I can't find the other one, Teague.
It's all good.
I'll give it to you after.
All well deserved. But there are a lot of names that you know. Sometimes you get those College Football Hall of Fames. You don't necessarily remember. You remember all these guys.
Absolutely. No, that's true. Very easy name recognition, no doubt. All right, coming up, Lamar Jackson cracks through. The detractors got to back up. We'll talk about Lamar and what this means for him moving forward.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.